Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is the last day of March. March Madness about to end in a few hours, I guess. This is our
Oh, the
Hoops HD
crown.
report.
The crown. The crown is madness.
This is our Hoops HD report on Monday, March 31st. It is our Final Four edition. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. We got Matt Sikowski and John Tytel up top here. Joby Fortes in the center square. David Griggs and Rocco Miller joining us from Bracketeer.org on his sides. David Dorman down in the bottom row there. And we've got a bunch to talk about. And one thing that we may mention for about 3 seconds at the end is the college basketball crown because nobody cares.
Correct.
But it is going on right now. But what we're really here to talk about is everything and anything that happened in the NCAA tournament. And I guess before we even go to the bracket, a couple of you were at different regionals. Rocco, let me start with you. You were in the West Regional this past weekend, correct?
Yes, sir. Sure was. San Francisco, Chase Center. It was good. It was a great week. I think we two out of the three games were phenomenal. We'll get into that. But overall, hosted by the Pac-12, which doesn't even exist right now, which is very impressive. They're still hosting big time regionals.
We didn't know if it was me that opened the door, so we're glad that you were there to let people in.
Yeah.
That's why I had to show up just to make sure we were going to get the games in, Chad. So it was good.
Tytel, you were down in Atlanta at the South Regional, correct?
I was in the dirty South, Chad, and it was a great experience at State Farm Arena. Rocco's Bracketeer folks took very good care of me, as did the NCAA, although they didn't give me a seat. Party looked pretty good. Auburn looked amazing. I wasn't sure how good Jhené Broome is because I didn't get to see him in person too much. I'm a believer in Jhené Broome now.
And Griggs, you were at the CBI, correct?
Yes, I was at the CBI. I went to the wrong place. It was in Daytona. I thought it was in the bigger Coliseum. Turns out it was in the parking lot of some hotel.
I don't think that was a CBI, Craig said. I don't think we want to know more either.
Yeah.
But let's go
I
ahead
was
here.
not a believe. I don't remember who was there, actually.
There were 250,000 people at the racetrack. Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Let's get to what happened on the court because that's what we're really here to discuss, and not only what happened, but what we're looking forward to this weekend in San Antonio. But let's begin. Tytel, where you were at the South Region there, which saw the Auburn coming out to make the Final Four after they beat Michigan State, who had a heck of a game, I guess, in that regional semifinal against Ole Miss, among other things.
Yes, so let's start with the semis. Sean Padula was great for the Rebels, and Chris Beard can coach in March, but Izzo is just on another level, frankly, and was out for revenge after Beard had beaten him several years ago in the tournament. So Jace Richardson, also for real, as a freshman. I wasn't sure about him, but I'm a believer in him now. I got a great photo of him coming off the court with just this ecstatic look on his face. As far as the other semi, I was driving back because I needed to get home before dawn, and it looked like Auburn handled Bowling Green in the second half. The first half and part of the second half, Michigan was looking great. Sorry, Dusty. Sorry, Rocco. And then in the Elite Eight, just too much Jhené Broome. He had a double-double in the first half. He injured his elbow in the second half, came back and made a three. And the crowd, which was, I thought Michigan State traveled, which they do, but Auburn is within a couple hours of Atlanta, and the crowd was just orange as far as you could see and very loud. You might think it's a football school, but they are on board for basketball. And if Broome is healthy, every team's a legit threat. They're all one seeds, but it would be hard to bet against Jhené Broome.
Yeah, Dorman, how about this Auburn team though? I mean, what they've done so far in this tournament, I think they prove they deserve that one seed, the number one overall seed.
I'm with you. I thought they should have had it going in, and they got it. And I know there's people talking. They were cold coming in. They lost three of the last four. I was with the people that said they deserved the overall one seed, and I think they earned it. And I think they showed incredible fortitude. They worked their butt off on defense, and they're all over the boards. And I know Coach Pearl was emphasizing rebounding and not letting Michigan State have second chances. And defensively, they didn't give up second chances. He gave up a little more than he would have liked. And there was a rotation about in the middle of the first half where Michigan State got about three or four threes off in one possession, but they couldn't hit anything. Michigan State was just ice cold. And I give a lot of credit to that Auburn D. They were up in their face, and they were playing hard as it gets. And that's a tough defense to work your sets against. And nothing was working for Michigan State. I give all the credit to Auburn and their defense, and they looked the part this weekend.
Yeah, Matt, the other two teams that lost in the Sweet 16 round, Michigan and Ole Miss, I don't think we should overlook what they did this season either, though, because both of these teams had amazing seasons, even if they only won two games, I guess.
Well, that's why going into the tournament, and then at least going into the Big Ten tournament, makes you look like their season was fading and we're going to go probably nowhere. So the fact they end up winning the Big Ten tournament, getting the Sweet 16, put a nice cap on Dusty May's first year there. Nice building block for that. And then Ole Miss, man, they gave Michigan State quite a game. The Michigan State ended up winning in the end, but Ole Miss led for much of that game. And then after blowing out Iowa State and that holding out against Carolina, building the big lead, holding out in that. Have a very nice year for Chris Beard in there. That's when I'm not sure how much longer Chris Beard's going to be an Ole Miss, but yeah, he did definitely leave them a couple of positive memories for a program that doesn't have too many in basketball.
Yeah, and so now we've got Auburn in the Final Four. Their opponent is going to be Florida. And Rocco, I know you were in San Francisco, so let me start with you with the Florida Gators winning this West region.
Yeah, well, you know, when you cover a regional, it starts, especially for these Thursday, Saturday, it starts on Wednesday with the practices and the press conferences, interviews, and so forth. And so it's a long Wednesday just to get acclimated with the four teams in town. And, of course, the big story Wednesday was about Kevin Willard and Maryland and just the awkwardness of basically every Maryland media representative that I spoke to. I basically kind of quietly already known that he took the Villanova job about 24 hours before the game started. So it created quite the awkward week in terms of the Crab Five and the Terps, who were just coming off of the only buzzer beater of the tournament. So that was an interesting way to start the week. Interestingly, Maryland did come out playing very hard, playing very well. Their crowd got into it. They had a really nice representation out in San Francisco. Great first half, only down two, but then Florida very quickly got that up to double digits in this early second half. And with about 10 minutes to go, that was just kind of the wheels fall off for the Terps there. And they lose by, I think, 16 at the end, but it got to 18 or 20 for a while. Kind of an awkward ending, because if you look at Maryland's entire season, Chad, they never lost a game by more than six all year. And I know Florida's no slouch, so certainly not embarrassing, but it really just felt like they gave it one go in the first half, and as soon as it started to slip, it really slipped. Then we got a classic game Thursday night, unbelievable game with Arkansas and Texas Tech. For about 30 minutes, Arkansas looked not only like a Final Four team, but maybe a team that could win it all, just clicking on all cylinders, coming off of that St. John's win. They had just a ton of confidence. And then in the last 10 minutes, Texas Tech behind Darian Williams, Christian Anderson, just the will to win was so impressive. They had me behind Texas Tech's bench in both games, right behind McCasland. So I heard a lot of their huddles and just the motivation and their like relentless ability to refuse to lose was unbelievable. And then, of course, in the championship game of the West to go to the Final Four, kind of the opposite happened. Texas Tech, an amazing effort to build a 10-point lead. And then late, Florida comes up with a strategy with under 3 minutes to go to actually intentionally foul JT Toppin in a one-on-one situation, knowing the analytics of him being a low 60% free throw shooter. It pays off. He bricks the front end. They do it again, and Williams bricked. I didn't think that was as smart, but they got away with both. And that's how the game quickly went from a 9-point Red Raider lead to a 3-point Red Raider lead. And everybody's looking around like, how the heck did that just happen? And then the next possession, Florida ties the game. So it was just an unbelievable sudden surge, and Florida ends up winning and icing the game just like in the snap of your fingers, Chad. And at the end of the game, I think a lot of us were looking around kind of in shock, like, how the heck did that just happen? You know, previous media timeouts, people were starting to prepare for Texas Tech going to the Final Four, this and that. And next thing you know, Florida's partying and on the court cutting down the nets. So an amazing experience. I feel like I was lucky to be probably at the best of the four sites, just in terms of the drama of both Texas Tech games, both good and bad. And yeah, that's how I saw it in person.
Yeah, Joby, it was amazing. It's almost like reverse for Texas Tech.
Yeah.
Incredible comeback followed by allowing the incredible comeback.
Yeah, the story, if you wanted to watch this region, it was definitely just follow the two Texas Tech games regardless. And it right. really was a tale of two games. And, you know, I've got to give Florida, because, you know, Rocco's right. You know, it was a brilliant strategy on fouling Taupin. And then Williams, who's actually a decent free throw shooter, not converting on the actually Williams failed the first time. I think that's what led them to do it with Toppin. I was like, oh, that worked.
Correct.
But yep. Clayton was the key here, because for all Hoff was amazing throughout the game. The size of Florida, Texas Tech was kind of early throughout most of the game was willing. I mean, they had offensive rebounds that, you know, you just don't expect Condon to give up and others to give up, but it was pure effort by Texas Tech. They were doing their blockouts were very good against a Florida team that gets a lot of offensive rebounds. But then you focus on the bigs, which is rightfully so for the Gators. That is a very big key for them. They're just taller than everybody. But Clayton was the key and the best play of the tournament I have seen, except for a very good coaching move that we will talk about later. Was Clayton driving, said, nope, I'm going to go backwards, do a turnaround three. And that was the tying three, if I remember. And that just was amazing because, let's face it, he misses that. Texas Tech then gets it. They have two shots now. You assume they get one of them with, like, how much time is left? 19 seconds, I think, at that point or something. Third, maybe. It was under 30, I think. So that shot, that amazing shot, not only saved Florida season, but propelled them to the Final Four by closing out in regulation, because Texas Tech took the quick shot and then, you know, and then Florida took care of business, unlike Texas Tech at the free throw line.
Yeah, so there we go. We got Florida and Auburn in the Final Four. We'll get to that matchup here in a few minutes, but Griggs, let me go to you here. I'm going to scroll over a little bit here, put the Midwest in the center, and maybe it was that over what Texas Tech did in their two games, but maybe it was also was this Houston Purdue game in terms of great games of this tournament in these two rounds.
It was a really good game, and Chad, in the way that this game played out, kind of surprised me. Houston, who we've watched all year, tends to beat teams with, for lack of a better metaphor, a slow boil. It just keeps getting it's close throughout the first half, but you know, instead of just exploding or blowing it open, they just sort of inch ahead and make the plays they need to on offense, and then on defense they just suffocate you, and eventually you're just suffocating or boiling or whatever. This game didn't go like that. Right when you felt like Houston had control of it or was going to get control of it and was just about to shut Purdue down the way they seemingly shut everybody else down, Purdue kept making plays. They got themselves into it. They tied the game, and then it was just that, I mean, we've all seen it 100 times, just an almost an iconic inbounds play for Houston to win the game, where no one covered the man inbounding the ball. The man that was the person guarding him went over to help, left him wide open. They just gave it right back to him. It was a design play, and that ended up being the game winner. But I gotta say, and I know that this is kind of a backhanded compliment, I don't, even though they lost, I don't think there was a moment during the year where I was more impressed with Purdue than I was in the last few minutes of that game against Houston, who I still think is the best team.
Yeah, it was, and you know, it's kind of funny because I actually saw game films where, you know, basically the study that Kelvin Sampson did of the way that Purdue defends those inbound plays. There's almost all season you could see on these replays that they tended to leave that one guy open underneath, and nobody really caught him doing it until this game. But there yeah. it was on that. They just got the guy right open. And Joby, let me go back to you real quick, because part of it has to do with the treatment of Cryer versus a guy like RJ Lewis, who is now transferring out to St. John's in the final minutes of a game where he had not been playing well.
Yeah. Lewis had gone 3 for 17 or something like that. A very poor game. And just, yeah, he looked out of it, but when Patino sat him, he really was out of it. Sampson did not do that with Cryer. He kept Cryer, he kept Cryer in the game. And Cryer's a really good defensive player too, so there's this element to his game you can, but Sampson was like, don't stop shooting. Don't, just because of you are. He was, I can't remember if it was 1 for 11 or 1 for 12, but it was one of the two. It was like 1 for 11 before the biggest three swing in that game, because Houston was up. People forget Houston was up comfortable. They
They were.
were looking, oh, that they're they got this, they got this. And then Purdue started clawing back at the 7 minute mark and just clawing back, clawing back, clawing back. And the only points that stopped the Purdue run before the amazing final play with Sampson was a 3 point by Cryer that if that doesn't happen and stem the tide, Purdue is in the Final Four, without a doubt in my mind. But when the chips were down, Cryer nails the three, beautiful shot, great stroke, like nothing had happened to that point. That's how champions are made. And Houston has a darn good, like all the teams will list, but has a darn good shot at being the one who cuts down the nets in San Antonio.
Yeah,
It is a home game, you could argue.
not that far. Dorman, how about the other half of the Midwest region here, though, where Tennessee, almost a tale of two games, kind of like with Texas Tech, looked so good against Kentucky, and then almost no-showed the Elite Eight game.
Yeah, they played so well against Kentucky. I kind of thought that was going to happen. I just didn't think the disparity between those two teams, that Kentucky was going to beat them 3 in a row. And I know all of our numbers here that it's tough to beat a team 3 in a row, but no, it's not. When you're that talented, Tennessee, and you've blown two big SEC games to them, there's something in your chops. There's something you believe. And Rick Barnes got it out of them, and they played awesome against Kentucky. Kentucky really never was in that game. And then the same thing happened to them yesterday morning. Absolutely. Houston's defense was stuck on Tennessee,
Oh my
and
God.
Tennessee's offense could not run those sets, and they could not get those jumpers going, and they couldn't get their curl cuts, and Ziegler couldn't find anyone in his passing game to hit someone in stride and get it going. It had to come one-on-one because they were all up in their face. The Cougs' defense was awesome, like it's been all year. That's why they stun these teams that hasn't seen them. We said it during the conference tournament. Wait till these teams get away from their conference foes. You saw it here with Houston, all four games. They're in your face, they're all over you, and you just don't see that defense wherever any conference that these teams are coming from.
Yeah, Griggs, this might have been the best I saw Houston play all season, though, this one game. And I've seen them play a lot of great games.
I think it may have been. And one of the things that, I mean, not to just repeat what Dorman just said, but how they jumped out ahead of them. And you just sort of knew that, like, Houston is not a team you want to fall behind against because you're not going to catch up. They're so good. I've heard life changing. I mean, coaches have described their defense
Life
that way.
altering defense, yes,
Life
whatever it
altering
is.
defense. I like to think that at the Ides of March, had Julius Caesar had Houston's defense there, no way he gets stabbed to death. I mean, they're just that good.
And they're shooting the ball better this year. They have
Yeah.
3-point shooters, and now the shooting comes with the defense, and it looks like it's all together.
So Houston, the third team in the Final Four, the fourth is the Duke Blue Devils. Matt, I'll go to you instead of going to Dorman or Tytel for their game against Arizona. So because neither one is very happy about the end result of that one, but they did win it.
Arizona gave Duke a great game. That's I think this I can still maintain this will, that will be Duke's closest game in the tournament.
Might be.
And then now I think
Really,
Stetson is
you
a
think
hair
Houston's going to beat them
deceiving.
that bad? Wow.
I think they're going to beat Houston that bad. Yes, by at least more than
You
seven.
missed what I said. But I said, so you think Houston's going to beat them that bad?
No,
Yeah.
the opposite. I think Duke wins about 75 to
Yeah.
60.
Wow. But
I
yeah. So
know.
go ahead,
I'm
Dorman.
sorry. When I was watching Flag against Arizona, and I saw Flag a lot this year, as we all have, I thought that was his best game of the year against Arizona. I thought he was phenomenal Thursday night.
Yeah, Tytel, I do have to ask you. I mean, Duke puts up 100 points. By the way, we'll get to it in a moment here. Alabama also put up 100 points in that same round, but But yeah, I think your Arizona team acquitted themselves very well against an incredible team, honestly.
They did on offense, Chad. If you're scoring 93 points in against any one seed, you have my respect, whether or not I went there for school. And Caleb Love finally having the game of the year. But yes, Flag was great, as Dorman said, but just the supporting cast. I keep going back and forth with Maluach, but 13 points on 6 of 8 shooting and 6 boards and 4 blocks, like, he dominated the paint. And my favorite name, Con Knipple, 20 points, like, he's the understudy to Flag. He'd be the star on any other team, the ACC, much less maybe even the country. So am I glad that we scored 93 against Duke? Of course I am. Have I said for the past several months that our defense is not national championship good? Of course I have.
Rocco, Duke then got by, then took care of Alabama. Amazing here. Alabama put up 113 points on BYU and almost got only half of it, got just a little bit more than half of that against Duke with their 65.
Yeah. Well, Duke's number one in the nation against defending effective field goal percentage, and BYU's 292nd defending the three. So just go ahead and take a look at defensive numbers.
That three-point shooter by Alabama was ridiculous in that BYU game. I'm sorry. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, but I mean, that will happen when you're not accounting for all five guys, and that's a five-out team. Yeah, obviously, you know, it's probably not common to break records the way they did, but that's certainly on the table when you leave so many open shooters out there. Matchup nightmare for BYU in the end, because you're not going to out Alabama without defense. So Duke obviously is massive, number one in average height in the country. They don't have a player shorter than 6'5". And so you knew Alabama was going to have a hard time getting clean looks. Even if Duke was slightly out of position, they could make up for that with their length. And obviously a big issue when shots don't go in to try to create second chance points against such a massive Duke team on the front line. So yeah, obviously held the 65 game, stayed within 10 for a while, for a long while actually. But then once it got above 10, it was pretty much cruise control for the Blue Devils. Really impressive performance. They've had tons of impressive wins all year, but you could argue that might be their most impressive win of the entire season. The Auburn win was at home. This was everything on the line in the middle of New Jersey, obviously a pro Duke crowd still, but they really brought it, and what it takes, where it takes effort and energy and hustle, is on the defensive end, and they really brought it, and that disabled what Alabama loves to do. Nate Oates really complained about that in the post-game presser, talking about how they had to go ISO more. You know, they ended up going ISO like 5 or 6 times in the second half, and he hadn't seen that from them since November. So that just tells you Duke's playing defense at a level that Alabama didn't even see in the SEC this year. So that's a lot of high praise, really, from Coach Oates.
Right. And Griggs, as I try to bring the screen out here, we have now, for the second time ever, all 4-1 seeds in the Final Four. And 3 out of 4 kind of almost in blowout fashion to get to the Final Four, other than the Florida comeback.
Yeah, now I think they've only been seeding the tournament since 1980. So in 1939, I think the top four did get there.
When there were only 8 teams in the tournament.
Yeah, when there were only 8 teams in the tournament. But second time, yeah, it is kind of the second. It is the second time ever. I think the first time that it happened, although I so wanted to see that Davidson team beat Kansas and get there, it was almost sort of the intrigue that, you know, 4 number ones in the Final Four. This year, we had said all year long that we thought that there were 6 number one seed caliber teams. In the profiles showed that, but if you look at the predictive metrics, and I know like Matt and Joby and probably Rocco are a lot more well versed in them than I am, but I was looking at them today, and I just realized the gap between 4 and 5 was noticeable. I think it was bigger between 4 and 5 than it was between 5 and the next 6 teams down. So not only was it the 4 number one seeds, is it fair to say, with all respect, and they deserve a lot, to Tennessee and Alabama, that these were clearly the 4 best teams really since November?
I would just throw Michigan State in that group, but if you want to give respect to somebody else also.
Well, okay, yeah, Michigan State as well.
I think there would be 3, but yeah, anyone want to take that?
That's what, interestingly enough, going into Houston, Tennessee, it was like Houston was only a 58% favorite. So I think the way they blasted Tennessee, I think helped that number. Like if Houston jumped back, I think they jumped up back to number two over
Okay.
Florida in Ken Pom after that. So I was like, Houston, Tennessee, I thought was going to be a much closer game. It just turned out to be like Houston was a better version of what Tennessee wanted to be, and then Tennessee hated playing against it.
Why don't we take a look at these national semifinals first here? First of all, coincidentally enough, Auburn played all three other Final Four teams during the course of the regular season. Obviously, Florida being a conference game,
Yeah.
they lost to. They also lost to Duke. They beat Houston, which was the only team they bought. They beat of those three. But Tytel, let me start with you. Auburn versus Florida, and I believe that is the first game of the yeah, that is the first game of the night here on Saturday in the semifinals. What are you looking forward to in this game?
I'm trying to pull some info from their first meeting back on February 8th, but I don't know how appropriate or prescient it will be for a couple of reasons. Number one, Auburn got out to a 15-5 lead that night and got blown off the floor in the second half. They ended up only losing by nine, so they were able to come back a little bit. But they also lost to a Florida team that was missing Elijah Martin. Broom was solid, 18 points, 11 boards, 6 assists. Miles Kelly, 22 points. So Auburn had the full supporting cast and the star player and still lost on their home court, which speaks volumes about Florida missing one of their best players. So I'm leaning Florida, although revenge is a dish best served cold. And I still think Golden's a little young compared to, he is young compared to Pearl. I think Pearl's got something ready for them. But I'm going with Florida, I think, just because they were better and they were missing a good player.
All right, you're going Florida. Dorman, do you agree with him? Going Florida in this game?
I do. I'm with Tytel. I like the
Okay.
Gators here. Chomp, chomp. I just think at the end of the day, too many 3-point shooting. Clayton is playing as well as anyone in this tournament. Not that Broom's not. The two of them are probably top three or four guys in this tournament. I can't wait for the matchup. I think it'll be phenomenal. But yes, I think the Gators get it done.
And then Joby, the nightcap, Duke and Houston.
Oh,
Oh.
what a game. I mean, and Rocco pointed out the underrated element of Duke's defense. That is going to, everybody knows Houston, but Duke also has amazing defense. And I think it's going to, sometimes you look at a game and you say, this team's performance, just one of the two sides, will determine the outcome. And I think that's the case here in this game. Does Houston, the Houston team that played Purdue, show up, or does the Houston team that had poor outside shooting, didn't quite have the offense clicking, or is it the team that played Tennessee? In other words, does Houston's offense come? If Houston's offense come, I think they take out Duke. I really do. And maybe it's because, Dorman's right. I think Flagg gave his best performance in the Sweet 16. I didn't think he was over dominating in the Elite Eight, and I think they could be contained to a degree by that great Houston defense. Can't is one of the only teams that can actually contain all those weapons that Duke have. But if Houston's not nailing shots, if LJ Cryer's going 1 for 12, then he's not going to get the opportunity to nail a key three, to put him over the top. So I'm going to say Sampson on with a week's rest will bring offense, and so I will go with Houston. But boy, I could look like I have a lot of egg on my face if all of a sudden the shots don't fall, because I could also see Duke win it, and not just win it at the buzzer, but win it by 20 points, much like they did to Alabama and others on
I am so looking forward to this game.
the
I mean, just the contrasting styles, and like as good as Houston's offense or defense is, and it is phenomenal, what can it do against a one of the most phenomenal and most potent offenses? This is just such a great matchup.
Yeah, and Rocco, you told us before about, we talked about Alabama, how great they were on offense against BYU, how they got shut down by Duke. If Joby's right, that it's about offense, isn't Houston in trouble then with this Duke defense?
Yeah, I think Houston's in trouble in terms of this matchup. It's a very interesting situation overall because, as you remember, all of last offseason, Houston's bad taste in their mouth was not having Jamal Shedd against Duke in the Sweet 16 game. Of course, they had a small lead when he got hurt. They lose to a different Duke team that only brought Proctor back this year. So obviously, Duke's got these ridiculously new weapons and a much taller, lengthier, better defensive team. I think the Houston program playing close to home, their only four losses this year, Chad, three in overtime and one by five to Auburn. So it's very difficult to blow Houston out. If anybody can do it, it's Duke. there's so many storylines here. It's crazy. But I do think just the way Duke has the size advantage, you know, you look at LJ Cryer, only 6'1", Milos Uzan, 6'4", Malik Wilson, 6'3", Mercy Miller, 6'4". They would all be Duke's shortest player. And the big guys are awesome for Houston. We love the way they pound the boards. They're going to play extremely hard, obviously, but they are undermanned as well at only 6'8", between Francis Roberts and Tugler. I think just Duke just is eventually going to overwhelm them. It's really crazy to say that out loud, but I can't pick against Duke in this matchup based on that.
I'll tell you what I want to do now. I want to go through each of you real quick here and give you a chance to tell me who's going to end up cutting down the nets here and who they're going to be in the finals. So Matt, who is going to win of these four teams and what's the championship game going to be?
I think Duke beats Florida. And I think if Janiah Broome is 100%, which I don't think he will be, and that I would actually like Auburn in that game, I think that injury is just enough to push Florida ahead. But I think Duke wins both games, and they win them both comfortably.
Dorman, what do you think?
I think Houston's defense is the story of the Final Four come Tuesday morning. I think they slow down Duke and Florida enough to get the national championship. I like Houston over the Gators.
You're taking Houston. Joby, what about you?
I'm in line with Dorman. As I said, I think Houston, as I mentioned, will bring the offense to San Antonio. That's kind of the key for me with Houston. If they have, I think the shots will hit at a reasonable rate combined with that amazing defense, but it'll be over Auburn, not Florida, in the final.
All right. Tytel.
So you're telling me Houston has lost one game in the past 4 months by a point in overtime? The Cougars over anybody in the SEC. I'll pick them over Florida, but Houston over Florida.
Rocco, how about you?
Yeah, I'll go Duke over Auburn. It's a tough pick because I think Auburn-Florida is a real toss-up. Obviously, you have the revenge factor for Auburn. Florida's got the house money factor. Now close to being eliminated twice. You could go back to that UConn game. They were in real trouble there, obviously in even deeper trouble with Texas Tech. I think Florida will play loose. Don't forget Todd Golden coached for 1 year on Bruce Pearl's staff at Auburn, helped him get the job at Florida originally. I thought they had an amazing game plan when they won in the jungle. I think they'll come back with an amazing game plan. I think a lot of times too, sometimes I've noticed with this Florida run, and of course I'm close with them, the coaches get more nervous than the players on this team. These players are always loose. Doesn't matter if they're down 9, down 4, down 10. And I think that's going to really help them in this Auburn revenge game to pull through. But it's so hard. I'm going to go Duke over Auburn anyway. Just the will to win for some of these older guys on Auburn might be the difference. But Walter Clayton Jr. is really hard to bet against as well. But I do think Duke's just by far the best team. And I think some years it plays out that way, kind of like a 2015 Kentucky example. And it really feels like Duke is that good this year.
Yeah, I got to tell you, when this bracket came out, my initial pick was Florida over Duke in the championship game. From what I've now seen from watching all these teams play four more games, I'm with you, Rocco. I'm taking Duke over Auburn in the championship, despite the fact that my championship game is still alive from before the bracket started. I think Duke is just clicking on all cylinders. I thought one of my biggest fears about Duke was the youth, because they are relying on two freshmen in an age of transfers and older players. But Flagg and Knupa are no longer freshmen, and it's clear that Flagg is not going to be dribbling the ball off his foot to lose a game here at this level. I don't think, at least, like you did earlier in the season. Griggs, what about you?
I'm going a little different than everyone else. First of all, I mean, I think we can agree that there's a big toss-up feel to both of these games. I know Florida beat Auburn earlier in the year, and not only did they do it, they did it at Auburn, but I wouldn't even really call it revenge as much as it is adjustments for a second time around. I just think Auburn is better, and in order for Florida to win, Auburn I just expect them to play better than they did during the regular season. So I think Auburn gets that one. I really like this Houston team. It's hard to pick against a Duke team that hasn't just gotten to the Final Four, but basically destroyed the earth on their way to get there. They've looked absolutely amazing. I just have a feeling. Part of it is I just feel like I need to stick with Houston. Because they were my preseason pick to win it all, and they haven't really let me down yet. The one key factor, if it ends up being Auburn and Houston, is will the plane or the bus need to turn around? And if it does, Auburn is winning that game.
I wouldn't
If
know
you want to
that.
throw back to November, did anybody get that reference?
Absolutely not, but
Auburn's plane had to go back.
Okay. I would just note here, Griggs, that you definitely need Houston to win it all because that's your only shot at winning our Beat the Puppet Bracket Challenge, which you probably can't win anymore, any at all, anyhow, based on the standings. But you did pick Houston to win it all in that event, so
I had
otherwise
Arkansas in
you're
the
stuck in the
Final
puppet
Four.
bunker.
I think I should get credit for that.
But that's our preview for this coming weekend. Let's take a quick look at some of the other events that are going on. Dorman. NIT semifinals are tomorrow night, championship on Thursday. We've got North Texas against UC Irvine and Chattanooga against Loyola Chicago in what has become a very good under-the-radar tournament pretty much at this point.
I think we're laughing about sometimes about these other tournaments. This tournament, the NIT, has been fantastic.
It has.
A lot of teams have gone on the road and come up with some big victories. It's been fun. It's been exciting. There's been a few good crowds across the country. Tomorrow night, I think we're in for two more great games. North Texas is tough. They're going to bring it. The Eaters of UC Irvine from the Midwest in the first semifinal, I think, should be fantastic. Contrast to Styles. I like the Mean Green to just edge them out, to wear them down, to grind them down. And then the second semi, we have the Mocs from the Big South of Chattanooga taking on the Ramblers. From the A-10, Loyola of Chicago. I look for Drew Valentine's team to come out fired up. They got a lot of seniors and juniors on the team that is probably playing their last game or two together. I think the family scene that Valentine put together at Loyola sticks, and I think the kids really like being around the program and around that coaching staff. I like Loyola to play North Texas in the title.
Oh, you like Loyola North Texas. Rocco, I got to ask you also. I do think Loyola is in the finals here. I love that what Chattanooga's done this tournament, but I think it probably comes to an end. I think I might go with Irvine here to win, not only beat North Texas, but maybe win this whole thing.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic with North Texas, first of all. Of course, Ross Hodge is already the coach at West Virginia, but he's going to stick with the Mean Green this week and coach them
Respect him
in
for doing
Gainesville.
that. Yes.
And he's really well loved down there. He's been at North Texas for, I think, at least 8 years between an assistant and a head coach. And so that's cool they're doing that. I think the Irvine guys, obviously, they're tough as hell. They could have backed down. They were down pretty sizable in the second half with UAB, but punched back as they usually do. And I think the fact that Irvine's going all the way out there, it's going to be enough for them to get to the finals. That Hodge thing might be just slightly in the back of the mind of some of the players or just everybody there that we're moving on now. Championship game is still 2 more days away, Thursday. Chattanooga, I'll take the upset there. Like,
Okay.
I know Loyola Chicago's played pretty well. They eked out a 1-point win over San Francisco to get back to Chicago for that last game. But Chattanooga took out Dayton and Bradley, and they went triple overtime to beat Middle Tennessee in the first game.
Yes.
I just feel like they might be like a little bit of a team of destiny, kind of like Lipscomb a few years ago when they got to the finals. So give me the Mocs, and I'll take the Mocs to win the whole thing over Irvine.
Let's go, Mox. All
Wow.
right.
Oh.
All right. Let's take a quick look. Griggs, the CBI finished up last week. Congrats to the Illinois State, the Redbirds. They get to finish the season by cutting
Yeah.
down nets as a champion. Is
Yeah,
there anything else we could say about this? But
taking home some hardware, a great event. Lots of people in Daytona for the tons of, I mean, Daytona was packed.
dozens.
Yeah.
Spring break.
That was a spring break week.
Yes, spring break.
As we record this, so we can, the college basketball crown is going on. There's the bracket. We've already seen Butler and Boise State secure wins. Matt, is there any more comments that we need to make about this event?
I'm stunned they're fielding teams with five players. I would think between the coaching changes and just disappointing seasons, these guys would all be in the portal by now.
Yeah,
That's not on.
this
who's
is the
coaching who's coaching Villanova tomorrow anyhow when they play? I don't even know.
I think it's still Mike Nardi still coaching them.
Okay. They're not gonna but
This is the college basketball portal invitational.
Pretty much. It's an invitational for teams that are they're not gonna have enough time to work on the portal because they had to come out here and play these games.
Well, Chad, there is a financial component to this event
yes.
that's, I think, important to mention. Every team that makes the Final Four, so two wins will get you at least 50 grand, I think, per player. Or maybe that's for the team to share. Maybe I have
Oh, hey, John, but I would, if it's per player, holy crap, somebody
yeah.
isn't losing a
You're right.
It's a, no,
You're
it's,
right.
a,
yeah, it is,
it's a nice
it is
number
per
per
team.
player. It's
Yeah.
a good number.
So then the number goes up, of course, if you get to the finals, the champion gets the most. So that's an interesting element. I think there's some guys that are playing in this that are already in the portal and know they're gone just because that opportunity exists. And it also got teams like Villanova, Utah, et cetera, with fired and replaced head coaches to participate. I think the other important thing of this event is that it's owned and operated by Fox, not the NCAA. And it's not going to be really discussed much this year, but I think the long-term threat of this tournament could change the dynamics of a future either NCAA tournament or maybe separate the powers from the non-powers with this model if the money continues to flow into it. This year is going to be really important to see where that goes, but I think it's certainly worth paying attention to.
Yeah, for I think it's more worth paying attention to for how it affects future years than really
yep.
not many people really care who actually wins the first crown.
Correct. Well, except for the players. The players
remember,
care. The
players.
Players care.
Yep. Remember that ESPN owns almost all the bowl games in the college football landscape. Yeah. That's where this model kind of, I think, begins with. Because it is still,
yeah.
No one's going to say, there will never come a day, there could come a day where the NCAA itself breaks apart, but there will never be a day where someone says, I got to play the crown. It's a NCAA tournament. That's just not gonna. That's if they are, then good for them. Go run and take the money. History will always be with the NCAA.
Well, the day that happens, Joby, I think we're gonna be shut down Hoops HD because I think I'll be done with this sport, honestly.
Yeah.
But let's go ahead and pull this down here. Ty, tell me about one other tournament that's going on though. As we record this, UConn and USC are playing the last of the four Elite Eight games in the women's tournament, but just like the men, we've already have 3-1 seeds in. You know, maybe the women are just following suit here, putting all their one seeds into the Final Four also, UCLA, South Carolina, and Texas.
They are. The horrible shame of it all is that this was supposed to be the Paige Beckers against Juju game, and unfortunately Juju's
yes.
torn ACL didn't make that happen. We certainly wish her the best because I think it could have gone down as an all-time great matchup, and it's not.
It's not, but we'll double check in again next week about that. And that's pretty much it for basketball. Rocco, you be going to the 3-point slam dunk challenge for Thursday night when you're down in San Antonio?
There's a chance. I haven't made any commitments yet. I'm just going to get down there, feel it out. So yeah, I might make it. We'll see.
Yeah, that'll be coming up Thursday night, I think, either before or after the NIT championship game. It's always a fun little event, a lot better than when the pros
yeah.
do that stuff. But that is everything. So I think we'll run through each of you for any other final thoughts. And Rocco, while I got you at the screen, why don't I start with you?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I just think in general, you know, I have to remind myself, obviously it wasn't fun not having as many upsets in the tournament as a general thought, but I think, you know, that each season has its own journey. And I think most of us agree that being a part of the journey, whether it's the team you want initially or not, winning is the best part. And this last weekend was a great reminder of that. I thoroughly enjoyed, you know, being around the Chase Center for 5 days and connecting with people from all four schools. And it's, you know, even though we end up with 4-1 seeds, it's honestly something, if you told me on opening night, I would be disgusted by that. The way the season played out with the way these four teams had clearly the four best seasons anywhere, it's still good for the sport and it's still been a fun journey. And we can always look back on this year
with that memory. And I think that's not such a bad thing. Now, if it happens 5 years in a row, it might get a little old. But as long as it's once per 15 years or so, like we had in 08, I can certainly live with that. And, you know, when you get to know these teams behind the scenes, which I've been fortunate enough to do, a lot of great people, so many more great people than not good people, that it just makes it actually enjoyable to see certain teams get to be able to taste the success. I would have been just as happy if Texas Tech won as I was for Florida. And I like what a lot of these high major programs have done. Of course, guys like you, me, and Griggs and Dorman do the under the radar. So many of these coaches now coming from under the radar. We'll have three Drake coaches in the Big Ten next year. So there you go. You know where the sport is going. We're going to have a lot of friends at the top. So we just got to enjoy the journey. That's my main thought.
And now the coaches, the players also with the portal. I mean, look who the star player on Auburn is. He came from Moorhead State. I mean, all these kids coming through.
From Iona, yeah.
And you're already seeing all these kids from the smaller schools that are committing to the big-time schools, and players moving from one big school to a bigger school. But and unfortunately, other players going to the portal and going nowhere. But we could talk about that in the offseason.
We will. I'm on the same kind of topic here as people after like 60 tournament games of this one season, this year's tournament, people are saying, well, NIL ruined the tournament. There's no more upsets because NIL, like, that's too short of a sample size to even go there. And even when we get a bigger sample size, I don't think that's going to be the truth. And people are saying, well, what do you mean? The big teams are going to take all the good players from the under the radar schools this year, and they're all going to be back in North Carolina and in Kentucky. Yes. And then next year, again, after the season, they're going to go to all the under the radar schools, and they're going to take all those kids because those kids, again, had great years at under the radar schools. So it's just going to keep going and going. I understand that year in and year out, they're going to get plucked from the under the radar schools. But year after year, these under the radar coaches are phenomenal. As Rocco just said, there's some incredible, great coaching staffs that are under the radar schools that aren't going to stop recruiting, that aren't going to stop going to Division II, like we saw Sturts and Drake did this year. There's so many great basketball players that the under the radar schools will be fine. They will. Recruiting is hard. It's not easy. They're going to be on the road a lot, but they're going to find great basketball. They're going to find great basketball players. They'll find great student athletes. They'll find great kids. And I don't think this 1 year of no upsets means the NIL has ruined the tournament and all upsets. I just don't see that going on.
Yeah, way too small a sample size. Agreed. Matt.
So I've been looking for this Final Four. You got Kai Chestov, Auburn and Florida, largely transfer built. Duke built on what it does. And Houston actually has a pretty strong core of their own guys. Sprinkled in, Cryer, Uzan, transfers. But then, Emmanuel Sharp in that, Tugler, Francis, in that, Roberts, and Arsenault, all guys they recruit out of high school. And that, Duke, the three best players, probably the one in Duds, Flagg, Knipple, and Malawak. And then their core of, Proctor and Foster returnees, James, Gillis, and that newcomer or transfer. So, a nice little blend there. So, interesting to see how these all mix out in that. I think, Duke with the most talent is definitely who I favor and their performances. But we'll see a couple of different styles here to where it's not just one size fit all where you got to go out of the transfer portal to win it.
Agreed also. Tytel.
So, following up on Matt's point about Duke, I always thought of John Shire as good, not great, but when you do a little digging into the resume, it starts to look a little great to me. State title as a player in 05 in Illinois, McDonald's All-American in 06, ACC Tourney MVP in 09, All-American in 2010 and won a championship as a player. 2015, won a championship as an assistant. And in his 3 years as head coach, he's got two ACC Tourney titles. He's now the third guy to ever make a Final Four as a player and coach at the same school, along with Dick Harp at Kansas and Hubert Davis at UNC. If he becomes the first to win a title as player and coach at the same school, he's got arguably the best resume of any 37-year-old coach in the entire sport, I think.
Right. Yeah. Joby.
I think that's pretty safe to say.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And in all full candor, I thought it would be Hubert would be the better hire instead of Shire. I'm being proven wrong annually. and that note. But we go back. We've said it several times on the show. Last time we had all four number one seeds was 2008. Things played out to form. If we remember, it was a great game. Thank you, Billy Packer. It's over. No, it's not. because as Kansas beat Memphis. But things didn't play out for form in the Final Four. Kansas was actually the fourth one seed that year. North Carolina was the overall one seed. So if you take that same logic, Auburn, the overall one seed, Florida, fourth one seed, beats Auburn. Florida, maybe I'm wrong, and Florida will be champions just as Kansas was in 2008.
Maybe they will. My original pick would have been right then. Greg, do you want to finish the show off?
I don't know what the future of the sport is going to look like. Things that are different now than they were just a very short time ago, while the coaches' convention and all the hoopla around the Final Four will still take place. Now, largely because of the transfer portal, coaches are staffing, schools are hiring coaches, and coaches are staffing up before the convention. So is anybody going to the convention looking for a job like normal? I don't know. I think
Maryland is looking for a coach, aren't they?
Yeah, Maryland's looking for a coach. Maybe Rocco, you'll be there. Maybe you can get them to hire you. I think there's 1,700 players in the portal right now. It's just sort of becoming like, it feels like fantasy football or fantasy basketball, to where everybody's sort of drafting an entirely new roster every year. I don't think that it will be that way forever. I do think that there will be some sort of guidelines and stipulations that are agreed upon eventually, to where it'll still be transfer heavy, but it won't be rebuilding every team, rebuilding their roster every year, almost like at the JUCO level. But I don't know. But one of the things, a lot of the purists or a lot of the longtime fans say that this is bad for the game, and I get it. They don't like it. And a lot of how you used to relate to players and bond the players and become familiar with teams and watch them grow from year to year is gone. One of the things that is impossible to not notice is, despite no upsets and despite the portal and despite NIL, the ratings for this year's tournament have been absolutely through the roof, the highest in over 30 years. So the popularity of the sport, and I don't understand how, is not waning.
Yeah, people are watching, people are tuning in, and which unfortunately, unfortunately also gives cause for a lot of people at Power saying, hey, we can definitely add a few more games to this tournament and a few more teams. Yeah. And these are all off-season subjects that I think we can get to at some point. But on that, I do want to finish this show off for tonight at least. We are going to be back one more time for this season next Tuesday night with our wrap-up of everything. But at this point, on behalf of Matt Sikowski and John Titel up here, Joby Fortson, David Griggs, Rocco Miller, check him out at Bracketeer.org. And if you're in San Antonio, look him up at the Final Four. David Dorman down there in the bottom row. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll be talking to you again next Tuesday night.